Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
Church of Davis. My name is Alex Hader Winnett. I am this year's ministerial intern and campus minister.
And I'm Steve Burns, your worship associate for today. We're so glad you're here with us.
As Unitarian Universalists, we believe that everyone is important, worthy, and free. We believe that everyone is welcome here, regardless of where you slept the night, the money in your pocket, whom you love, the family of origin, or the family you chose. No matter your questions about God, the universe, and everything, all of you is welcome here today.
If this is your first time here, we hope that you will stop by our welcome table at the front so we can get to know you. Here you will find a community of caring and sharing.
And we're going to skip our invitations to community for later. And in the meantime, I would like to invite you to light a chalice and put a prayer or message in our milestone book. If you add a joy or sorrow, we will add it to this morning's pastoral prayer or to the caring corner in your bulletin. Now, to acknowledge all that is being held by the people in this room, we light one pillar candle for the sorrows of the world, for the moments that weigh heavily on our hearts and minds. And we light a second pillar candle for the joys of the world, for the moments of hope and celebration that lighten our hearts.
We now light our chalice. Blessed is the match consumed in kindling flame. Blessed is the flame that burns in the heart's secret places. Blessed is the heart with strength to stop its own beating for honor's sake. Blessed is the match consumed in kindling flame.
This service is about how to build trust, how to create trust in relationships. And there's actually a formula for how to do that. And it came from Dr. John Gottman, and you'll hear more about him in the sermon. And he watched couples for many, many years and could assess which couples would end up staying together and which ones would not. And I actually spoke with someone at the Circle dinner last night, and she said she had also read his research and was looking at a friend, the circle of friends, and saw some of these signs in one of their couple friends and thought, and sure enough, 6 months, so these are serious things. He has a ratio of the kind of feedback that you would give each other as friends. Think about this in any kind of relationship, as friends, in a community, but certainly with a beloved partner. And it's five things that are wonderful and affirming for every one suggestion for how things might be better. Right? Five. 5-1. And it's really not fair to go, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, zap. You know, so then the poor person is waiting, okay, that was number 2, that was number 3. So it doesn't, but just in general, the ratio is 5-1. Okay? So we're going to try that right now with you. And we're going to start with me. with me. yeah. So I'm ready for 5 good things about me. Come on. I'm kind. Okay, that's kind of good. Okay.
You're insightful.
I'm insightful.
You are terrific at delegating and invite and sharing your leadership.
This needs to be recorded.
A sense of style.
Thank you.
Music. You always have
music. Okay, that's more than five. Yeah. So then there's this other part.
So you told me to think of a criticism.
Remember, she's the one that gave you your
password. I know, that part's done. That makes me a little nervous.
And you gave me this assignment 5 minutes before the service.
It's true. Yeah, I'm really good at delegating, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could have used more than 5 minutes.
Yeah? Yeah, okay. Well, that's a fair comment. Yeah, okay, five more.
Creative.
Okay, I like this.
Spontaneous.
Yeah.
Lively.
Eventually. Sure. That's five. All right, Alex.
I was only told to come up with one.
All right, so the next person, I said, if you guys were good, and you are really good, I said Steve could do it, but I wasn't going to vet this process on Steve. You know, no, you don't get to give me feedback. No, you get to come out here. Yeah, you'd be all too good about that other part. Okay. So here's Steve. Five good things about Steve.
You're reliable.
He's reliable.
Great bass.
The great bass. Great bass.
Loves music.
Love his voice. Loves music.
You volunteer often. Generous.
Oh yeah. Okay, that's five. You know, don't overdo it. Right.
He's always friendly.
And so if there were to be something, 5 minutes of forewarning, person. What might you say to Steve? I don't know, something that's not going to decimate the poor guy, right?
Yeah.
Gee, Steve, I kind of wish you'd remembered the five energies of worship for the analysis. You know, that would have been nice. Yeah. So, but then he needs five more good things, so.
Oh, I appreciate your analytical mind.
The analytical mind.
Great grandpa.
Great grandpa. Oh, no lie. Mm.
They have integrity.
Integrity. He can fix things. Great. Okay. So you see the idea, though. The idea is that way, way, way more of the things that we love about each other, we have to say them. We have to say them. And how often we might forget to do that. And that was one of the wonderful characteristics. So we can hear, Alex actually does affirm me a great deal, we can hear those comments and say, yeah, you know, that's really true. If we've got this cushion of relationship that's built up. So you can imagine what this is going to be like in the 11:15 service with children here. So, but it really works, and it's been something that I've been using more and more. So thanks, Steve, for bringing me a guinea pig. And now you won't be able to come up with that one, Alex, because the next service, yeah, you will have had more than 5 minutes. But again, this is a service about trust. So someone who does not do public speaking and someone who is not a worship associate, we have a reading for the morning. And it's right here. It's big print. Waiting for you. And by you, it isn't Alex. Thank you, Barbara.
Trust by Thomas R. Smith. It's like so many other things in life to which you must say no or yes. So you take your car to the new mechanic. Sometimes the best thing to do is trust. The package left with the disreputable-looking clerk. The check gulped by the night's deposit. The envelope passed by dozens of strangers all show up at their intended destinations. The theft that could have happened but doesn't. Wind finally gets where it was going, through the snowy trees and the river even when frozen, arrives at the right place. And sometimes you sense how faithfully your life is delivered, even though you can't read the address.
So my reflection today. In preparation for this service, I watched a video about trust by Brené Brown. If you don't know of her, she's a professor and author who has spent the past two decades studying courage, vulnerability, shame, and empathy. After researching trust, she constructed a nine-element or component anatomy, which struck me as profound. The component that resonated most for me was integrity. Brown's definition of integrity: choosing courage over comfort, choosing what's right over what's fun, fast, or easy, and practicing your values, not just professing your values. At work, I encountered a number of challenging situations. It became clear that bullying, scapegoating, and other tactics were sometimes used. A shareholders' meeting had a long tribute to a retiring board member with stories of his motivation techniques. These stories could only be characterized as shaming and bullying. Yet the storyteller extolled how much they taught him and what a great leader this man had been. Standing up for what was right was not always easy there. More than once, while doing a three-week training class for engineers, I was asked to divert from the syllabus and take the class on a repair mission for a malfunctioning research instrument. Each time I refused, knowing that the information being imparted to the engineers was critical and it would hinder their effectiveness if their training was shortchanged. I grew exasperated with my boss, who was being pressured to make me do this exceptional divergence. I finally told him that if he had a VP make the request, then I would do it. That call never came, though it was easier to hold my ground being thousands of miles away. Sometimes acting courageously turns out well, other times not. I later found that test procedures to validate medical equipment had been significantly shortened. This change was covered up with deliberate falsehoods in the documentation. After mulling on the proper course of action, I brought the situation to light. As you probably know, being a whistleblower is a career-limiting move. For 2 years, they documented all the ways I was a poor employee after being a highly valued one. But I lost that job. It was a mixture of great relief to be out of the regularly toxic environment and a shock to be terminated. But my integrity couldn't have remained intact had I kept quiet about what was going on, and I wouldn't do anything differently. I have learned and truly believe that what we worry about often never comes to pass. Though risks certainly exist and bad outcomes are a possibility, but what do we potentially miss by staying safe? Taking the risk to move outside my comfort zone helps me live in congruence with my values and can also allow me to more deeply connect with others. In thinking about situations where my actions fell short of the mark, I try to forgive myself when less than courageous. Much like epic journeys, growing our courage can begin with one step and then another. As we collectively step up to the moment, it can embolden others to do the same. In these times, can we live with ourselves or simply live? If we don't practice courage, can we trust ourselves if we don't do our best to live with integrity?
Steve, focused on the importance of living with integrity to establish relationships of trust. His ending question, can we trust ourselves if we don't do our best to live with integrity, is an important place to begin. One of the messages I appreciate in Steve's reflection is the importance of cultivating trust that we have for ourselves, even over and beyond the trust that we have for others. Maya Angelou wrote, I don't trust people who don't love themselves and tell me I love you. There is an African saying, which is, be careful when a naked person offers you a shirt. If we don't trust ourselves, then it's very difficult to extend genuine trust to others. About 10 years ago, I taped a very tiny inspirational article from the newspaper on the refrigerator. It stayed on the fridge door until the paper became brown and pretty much flaked away. Dinner guests, while it was there, would hang out in the kitchen and peruse the refrigerator messages. I don't know if anyone else has messages on their refrigerator, but mine is plastered with them. Pictures, interns, Christmas photos, art. And this scrap of paper received the most attention. The short article, really short, was an interview with a New York City taxi cab driver. He'd returned a wallet that had thousands of dollars in cash in it, and not one bill was missing. And he refused the reward money. And when an interviewer asked why he had returned the wallet when he could have kept it and no one would have known, no one could have traced it to him, he said, I would know. I would have been tarnished. The heart, my own heart, would have been tarnished. And I would feel it every day. To live with trust in the world, first we have to trust ourselves. We are the ones who have to live with our own heart, tarnished or beautiful, and it's where our trust for others begins. We arrive at adulthood predisposed with a certain level of trust in the world. Our childhood experiences inform whether we believe life itself is at least somewhat predictable and trustworthy. We may have experienced a consistently loving family environment, or our lives may be filled with traumatic change, and we have no reason to believe that anything will be worthy of our trust. But even for those who have been surrounded by unpredictable people and upheaval, most of us have a resilient spirit, and we are designed to seek out trusting connections with others. Human beings are actually wired for relationship. You've heard about Brené Brown. She said, trust is choosing to make something that is important to you vulnerable to the actions of someone else. It's taking something that's important to you and making it vulnerable to the actions of someone else. We want relationships that we can trust. We want to know that we can be with others who will have our best interests at heart, no less than their own. There is an old Dutch story about trust that was broken. A baker and a farmer had an agreement. The baker got butter from the farmer, and the farmer got bread from the baker. After a while, the baker noticed that the pieces of butter from the farmer that should weigh exactly 3 pounds seemed to become lighter. And when he checked on his scales, he was right. So he became really enraged, and he went to court, and he complained about his butter supplier. And in court, the judge challenged the farmer. The baker claims your pieces of butter do not have the required weight. And there in the court, they weighed the butter, and sure enough, it was less than 3 pounds. The farmer, he defended himself, and he said, "That's impossible. I check the weight every time." And the judge suggested, "Well, maybe your weights are incorrect." And the farmer replied in amazement, "My weights? I don't have any weights. I get my bread from the baker, and he gets butter from me. A loaf of bread weighs 3 pounds, and I trust his measurements and his honor, so I put my butter on the left part of the scale, and the bread is on the right." The story of the bread and butter is one of an intentional lack of integrity from someone in the baker's household. If we are trusting, we might give the baker as a person the benefit of the doubt. We don't know the end of the story of the baker and the farmer. We're led to believe that their friendly business arrangement comes to an end. But for those who study trust, and this is a very serious study, this moment in court may not result in the demise of the bread and butter exchanges. The future can be predicted by the quality of the relationship they had before they went to court. This bread and butter exchange had a history far before this moment in court, far before there was some question about exactly how much butter was in the scale. What would make our relationship strong enough to withstand the times when either we or our partner fail to live up to our ideals, our commitments to each other? Whether it's a love relationship, a friendship, or relationships in a community, the dynamic is the same. Trust is never static. It is always in a state of change. The balance of betrayal on one side of the scale and trust is on the other, like weights shifting. Trust is made and broken in the hundreds of choices we make every day in our relationships, every day. Dr. John Gottman researched how couples interact. He did this study for 40 years. He brought them to something called his love lab. And in the love lab, he observed them for 24 hours interacting just socially the way they would normally interact. And then he kept in touch with the couples for up to 20 years after their initial time of observation. And he discovered that he could predict which couples would have successful marriages and which couples would end in divorce. And one of those ways was a nonverbal gesture, which is the eye roll. And so if one person was speaking and the other one was like, that was a bad sign. Dr. Gottman doesn't only define betrayal as something large, like deceit, theft in business, or infidelity in a committed relationship. It's simpler. It's so much smaller. Gottman said that lying is betrayal, and we might think, of course, but the lie can be that small moment when we slightly misrepresent the truth to serve our own interests in some small way, you know, like shade the truth just a little. That is betrayal for him. It can be moments when we choose to withhold information, sidelining our loved one and aligning ourselves, sharing our inner life with another person, even if it's someone within the family, and putting someone on the outside. Betrayal is hiding ourselves from those with whom we are in committed relationships, all the ways we might choose to just hide ourselves a little and really not enter into that commitment with them. John Gottman told the story of his own relationship as an example. He had been waiting to read the ending to a mystery novel for weeks. He was getting so close to knowing the answer to this mystery. Who was the murderer? He was heading for his reading chair, anticipating opening those final chapters and finally finding the answer to that riddle that explained everything in the novel. And then he noticed his wife's face in the mirror as she was brushing her hair. And she was obviously sad about something. He said he had a choice. She hadn't really noticed him, he didn't think. And he could pretend that he didn't notice her either. And then go and read his book that he had been yearning to read. He also could have shown her that his desire for her welfare was even more important than what he wanted to do for his own happiness. And he decided to go over and just very simply to say, "What's bothering you? What's wrong, honey?" And that was gaining her trust. Even if she hadn't noticed that he was walking by, he knew whether his heart would be tarnished by choosing a mystery novel and his own imagining of how wonderful it would be to sit and read it versus taking the time that could have been a long time. He might have heard a long story about how he had missed the mark and given something to her with 5 minutes to prepare, for example. It shifted the weight in that balance, ever such a small weight. But Gottman tells us there are hundreds of these moments with our friends and our lovers and our business partners, with everyone around us. When do we turn toward that relationship, and when do we choose in small ways to turn away? And each time we choose not to see or not to respond, that is a small betrayal. Each one adds or subtracts to our level of trust in each other as a partner. And although our partner may not notice when we choose in a split second to avoid them, they do know when we choose to respond to them. Gottman also feels that trust is built in gratefulness. No relationship is perfect, and if we always look beyond this relationship, no matter what that relationship is, and kind of look around to see what might be better, he said that's how resentment grows in the person, saying, "Oh, this person is not so smart, not so great, not what I really need. What I need might be out there somewhere." And what happens, of course, is that the person is not present for the relationship that is right in front of them. He said appreciation is one of the cornerstones of trust. And although I have known the power of honest affirmation, I've really started to use Gottman's formula of affirmation with people around me. And the results are amazing. I encourage you to take it away and try it yourself. First, think about what is worthy of appreciation rather than analyzing for faults. And you know that Gottman's formula is 5-1. 5 wonderful things, affirmations for every helpful suggestion. And we know not to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, gotcha. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, gotcha. It's the number that we look at. What I loved was that Gottman ends each day by chanting a proverb to his wife of gratefulness. I call it a song of trust. He said it's different every time, of course, but it's, "I'm grateful to be your partner. You're a wonderful friend. Without you, I wouldn't have a loving family and children and grandchildren." And as a consequence, he begins to watch for her attributes and they become far more important than what is lacking. That is what becomes the center of the relationship. So will the business relationship between the farmer and the baker continue? Will they both enjoy bread and butter? The answer is in the ratio of the 5-to-1. It's the parts of the story that we didn't hear. Maybe they've turned toward each other instead of away in their times of need to raise a barn or to build a dike, to create more land, whatever Dutch farmers do, I don't really know. But in far smaller ways, when they are in the midst of the exchange, offering the other man a warm handshake and a quick embrace when he looks tired, asking about the daughter that planned to be married. That's how their trust might have been built. A week after the courtroom scales showed a betrayal, they might be found eating together, eating bread and butter, and talking, laughing. Because that is possible, even when trust is broken, when there's enough in the reserve. Sometimes there's something even stronger that comes out of it. And sometimes we help to shine the tarnish in each other's hearts. And to that I say, amen. Amen. And I invite you into a time of prayer and meditation to rest your shoulders, to put down the cares of the world for this short time. To breathe. To be in this space together in one community. Don't look for silence. But just in a quiet, we hold together. And we hold in our hearts with celebration many new members who will be joining later this morning. May they find the community that they have joined in this congregation. And may all here welcome them with open hearts and offer them their trust. We move into a time of silence, hearing the singing bowl that rings into the mountains in South Korea, to welcome the spirits of all living creatures. Do more than simply keep the promises made in your life. Do something more. Keep promising. As time passes, keep promising new things, deeper things, vaster things, yet unimagined things, promises that will be needed to fill the expanses of time and of love. Keep promising. Keep turning toward each other keep turning toward each other for trust.
As a new worship associate, I'm speaking with you today about the theme of Together We Worship, one of our stewardship themes. I was the worship associate on Veterans Day, and in preparation for the service, I interviewed six vets and two of their wives in our congregation about their experiences in the military. I was nervous, as I have minimal knowledge of the military and skepticism of much modern-day military action. The vets greeted me with openness and graciousness. I felt moved and humbled by their candor and courage as they painted a picture of their complex experiences in the military. They explained with directness and honesty their work with a mixture of great pride and also ambivalence and sometimes regret. I felt honored to be in these conversations as I gained much reverence for their service. In turn, I believe the vets felt appreciated and affirmed in telling their stories to me and to each other as we met in a group for some of the interviews. And then by extension, I was able to tell the stories to the congregation. I found trust and curiosity were also critical in my process of learning. Because of our shared UU values, I assumed the vets wouldn't judge me for my ignorance and somewhat simplistic attitudes about the military. I think they expected I would listen to their experiences with an open heart and mind right from the beginning, and this opened up the conversation for us. The trust between us made me tender and helped to open up my curiosity. I realize that too often I'm not curious about things that are unfamiliar or test my sense of self. This realization rippled out to my interactions with my young adult son. I found myself more curious about some of his attitudes that I find difficult. I was moved to ask him questions to better understand his opinions and feelings. And I was wondering, as Beth was talking, if my asking questions was a little bit like affirmations to my son. And this kind of new attitude was unlike my more standard practice of avoiding the subject or simply advocating for my position. When I prepared for the Veterans Day service, I certainly didn't expect it would result in a general shift in my ability to be more trusting and curious in interactions, and that this would lead in kind to a deepening of understanding and respect for my son. I find the way we worship at UUCD to be such a gift. It's an experience that is crafted extremely thoughtfully and playfully and in communion with others. As a result, it has unexpected and multiple currents of impact. I was trying to kind of find the best metaphor, and what I came up with, it's kind of like when you toss rocks in a pond and you get a kind of unexpected and beautiful and complex pattern of undulations. Every service helps me to live into the first UU principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Maybe you found something in my experience of worship that you share, or maybe your experience is radically different. We want to hear more about what has inspired or moved you to worship here. You'll find cards in the social hall to post your comments on the stewardship bulletin board. Cards, they look like this. Different colors, and they have the different stewardship themes on them. You can then also read each other's responses and get to know the thoughts of others in the congregation on how they worship and learn together.
Thanks, Emily. I think there are at least five affirmations in that, so I'm ready.
So we extinguish one of our pillar candles. For the sorrows of this world, they await us. and also for the joys which we hope also are there, and also our chalice.
We're just going to help Steve, but he's got it.
Thank you for reaching out, touching a hand, finding a shoulder, making a human connection. Our benediction is from The Fellowship of the Ring by J.R.R. Tolkien. "But it does not seem that I can trust anyone," said Frodo. Sam looked at him unhappily. "It all depends on what you want," said Mary.
"You can trust us to stick with you through thick and thin, to the bitter end. And you can trust us to keep any secret of yours closer than you'd keep it to yourself."
"But you cannot trust us to let you face trouble alone, to go off without a word. We are your friends." Let this congregation say amen.
Amen.